Good morning, church. How are you? It is good to see you all this morning. Good to be together, as always, this morning. Thankful for Ty for doing such a great job filling in. I guess Tommy's not absent, but his non-presence up here anyway. Thankful that Tommy's able to be back with us. I'm half think this whole thing is a big hoax just so he can sing tenor as long as he wants. But we're thankful he is on the mend, and thankful to have the capable fill-ins that we have here at Forest Mill. It has been a busy week that we've got coming up here. Tonight is, of course, our teens have their costume party, and then later this week we have the trunk or treat. If you have signed up to bring candy and you haven't brought candy yet, that'd be a good idea. We strongly encourage Kit Kats. Bring whatever you want, but Kit Kats are good. That's going to be really big. I was thinking about that. You know, here we have, you know, we're a Christian church, and we have a couple of different Halloween parties going on, and some think that's kind of incongruous, right, that Christianity and Halloween don't go hand in hand. What I tend to think is we've taken something that was a pagan celebration and kind of made something special and even godly about it, where we celebrate one another, encourage one another, and uplift one another without honoring pagan gods. So I think it's a good thing. It's kind of making the best out of what was a bad situation. This last Friday afternoon, I tried to do the same thing. I was on a school bus out of Hillsboro Elementary. That's bad situation number one. Not that Hillsboro is a lovely community. The school is fine, but generally you get some kids who come from difficult home situations. I've noticed there. Strike number two was that I was riding with a substitute bus driver because she had never driven this route before, and she's an excellent driver, but she doesn't always know where she's going. Anytime you're a substitute, you kind of just have a vague idea where you're going. And so I had ridden on this particular route before, but it was several weeks ago. And so I had notes about, you know, this, we're supposed to turn on this road and stop at this house. But those things change all the time because so-and-so's not on today, or so-and-so who wasn't on the day you were on, they are now on now, so we stop here. And now new kids have been added onto the route, and so we don't turn down this road. We go up to this road and then loop back around. I mean, those routes and stops change all the time. So I was a little uncertain myself. And so what usually happens, just to fill you in, the inside scoop on what it's like to be a substitute bus driver in Coffee County schools. I know, be great party stories for you later this week. But what usually happens is you just get an older kid, right? A kid who's ridden this bus for years. They know all the turns. They know all the stops. And they can turn around and look and say, yeah, John's not here today, so keep going. Or we need to stop here for this girl. She's usually on the afternoon. Whatever. So that's usually what happens, and so that's what we did that particular day. And towards the end of the route, my notes had, we're going down 127 towards Viola out of Hillsboro, and we dropped off a girl at a house, and I have in my notes, we're supposed to turn around and back up into our driveway, turn around, head back towards Hillsboro. So that's what I had in my notes, and I said that out loud. I thought, I think we're supposed to turn around here and head back towards Hillsboro to drop off the rest of these kids. And the junior in high school who is sitting behind me that I've been asking questions, he goes, no, we used to do that. Now we keep going. So I'm thinking, okay, there must be kids on here that I don't know about or something like that. So we just kind of keep going. We come up to the next road. I said, we turn here? No, no. And we come up to the next road, and we turn here? It goes, yeah, I think so. So we turn down this particular road, which I don't even know at this point what road this is, because apparently it's a huge deal to steal road signs in Coffee County. It's just so fun. And so we're turning down this road that goes out to the middle of nowhere. We kind of are like waiting and looking. We're like, turn on this road? No, no. Will we stop at this house? No, no. We should yell through the whole bus, does anybody live on this road? The kids are like, no. So we keep going. We get to the end of that road where it dead ends into another highway out in the middle of the nowhere. And we're like, okay, do we go left or right here? And the kids from the back kind of go, finally go, and I quote, we don't know, we've never been here before. So anyway, And this little boy who was sitting beside me, who was probably in first grade but told me he had been on the bus for 4 years, was really, really helpful in that he said directions and things all the time that had no relation to reality. And he at this point, he looked at me, and I learned something about myself because he looked at me and he said, "Whoa, your ears are really red." So I learned that when I'm angry and frustrated, my ears get really red. I don't normally look at myself in those circumstances. I also learned a really valuable lesson that no matter how well-intentioned your leader may be, wrong directions lead to wrong destinations, right? We wound up in the wrong place because we followed the wrong directions. We didn't know rightly where we were going. We eventually had to turn around and backtrack, at which point I found out it was Fred Lusk Road. Apologies if you're here this morning, Fred, but it was not a great place to be. We turned around, we had to go all the way back, and then turn all the way back, and we had to backtrack our steps to eventually pick up the right place where we'd left off. One of the things I'm most thankful for about the Forest Mill Church is that we are a church who talks about discipleship, and we practice discipleship. In other words, it's not just about what you believe or the doctrines, it is about what you do, right? It's important what you believe, it's important what you think about the church, or it's important what you think about how things ought to be done. That's important. But what's really important is what you actually do with that. We spend a lot of time talking about following Jesus. This week we're beginning a new series, and it's probably going to take us a little while. Just settle in for it. It's going to be on what's called often the forgotten gospel. It's the gospel of Mark. We most often teach out of Matthew, probably so close to second is Luke, and then third John, and then a distant fourth is Mark. We don't teach out of Mark because it's not very smooth. It's not very, quote-unquote, well-written. It is hard to follow sometimes and figure out what's going on here. It just seems like random story after random story after random story. It's tough to make sense of it. Mark is the oldest gospel. It was written, in fact, a lot of people believe that both Matthew and Luke used some of Mark's writing as a source and when they're writing their stories, and you'll find that Matthew, Mark, and Luke all have a lot of the same stories. Most of Mark's stories will appear later in Luke and Matthew. So we're going to talk about, as we go through Matthew, because he places a great deal of, go through Mark, places a great deal of emphasis on discipleship, on what it really means to follow Jesus. So that's kind of our series is following Jesus, because Mark follows Jesus through his life, right? And as disciples, we're supposed to follow Jesus through his life. But if our goal is to follow Jesus and ultimately be like Jesus, the first thing that we really need to know is who Jesus is, right? We can't follow Jesus if we don't know who he is, because as we've already established, wrong directions lead to wrong destinations. If you have the wrong idea about who Jesus is, you can't really be a disciple. You may think you're being a disciple, you may think you're out on the right road, and you may think you know where you're going, but if you don't know who Jesus is, you're going to end up in the wrong place. So although we think we're mostly settled in our minds about who Jesus is, it's refreshing to go back and look. And as we work our way through Mark, I would encourage you to read the gospel for yourselves. As one of the earliest texts in Christianity, some of the letters of Paul predate this, but it is the oldest gospel. And remember that most of the people in that place and in that time were illiterate, right? They didn't read. It's not that they weren't smart, they just were never taught. It didn't come into, they didn't need to read. And so most of the time, Mark's gospel was read out loud, big stretches of it. Maybe even the whole thing. I was reading recently about a performance of the Gospel of Mark. Not acting it out, just having an audience and someone read through the Gospel. And it kind of came across better that way. That people were held in rapt attention because it goes so fast. And has such a powerful direction. And when you put it all together, it begins to start making sense. So I would encourage you, especially over the next week, I'd really encourage you to read at least the first chapter of Mark. Get into Mark. I would encourage you not just to read it, but to stop and to think about it and say, what does this say about Jesus? Who is this saying Jesus is? Because again, our goal is not just to have more information, but to be more conformed to the image of Jesus. And that requires careful thought, careful consideration. So commit yourselves to reading and thinking on Jesus. Commit to coming to Jesus with a desire to be whoever he is, to be conformed to whatever you learn about him. And so we probably ought to begin, if we're going to talk about Mark, we ought to begin with asking the question, who wrote Mark? Because Mark doesn't say that Mark wrote Mark, right? If we don't know who wrote it, why should we listen to him? It could be just some guy writing about something he doesn't know. Well, like all of the other Gospels, Mark never says, I wrote it. You know, he doesn't begin the book like a lot of Paul's letters. Paul begins with, I, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, right? He says that. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John never say who wrote them. We just have to kind of go off of history and sometimes read between the lines in both Matthew and John, Luke and John. But Mark never actually claims authorship in his writing. But as early as the second generation of Christians, not the people who actually followed Jesus, but the next generation later in the first century, they attributed this to, they believed this was written by Mark. That's the way they understood it. And this Mark, who was writing it, was an interpreter for the Apostle Peter. You may or may not have ever heard that. I had always thought it was the John Mark from the book of Acts, who was a companion of the Apostle Paul. And it may well be that it's the same person. There's no evidence for or against that, but it's not unlikely, so it could be. But all of the early church, they saw this Mark, the guy who wrote this, he is an interpreter for Peter, not the writer for Peter. You know, so in other words, we're not saying Peter said the gospel and Mark wrote it down, but rather, as Peter goes around preaching, he comes to a group of people who speak Latin. And he doesn't speak Latin. Mark speaks Latin. So Peter would preach and Mark would interpret. That's the way that they understood it. And very, very early on, in some really reliable texts, we have these Christian historians who record this Mark as traveling with Peter, interpreting for him as he preached over several years. And eventually Peter gets to Rome and Mark goes there with him. Therefore, though Mark himself never met and followed Jesus, you got to think, he's heard these stories dozens, if not hundreds of times, right? He doesn't just listen to them, he retells them in another language. Over and over, he heard and repeated the words and actions of Jesus. And at some point, he began to commit those to paper. It's also likely, based on what Mark says, that he's probably writing to a group of Christians who is coming under increasing persecution from Roman authorities and Jewish authorities. Christians who were living inside of Palestine were rejected because the Jewish authorities, remember, they're the ones who killed Jesus. So they don't want you following Jesus. And if you live outside of Palestine, if you live somewhere else in the Roman Empire, then you're not following and paying tribute to the Roman gods. That's who protects the empire. That's who makes us strong and makes us powerful. If you're not paying tribute to them, if you're not worshiping them, they're going to get mad at us and we're going to start losing. So outside of Palestine, Christians were coming under increasing persecution. So Mark wrote to those people. And if you stop and think about it, the story of Jesus doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, just on a purely human perspective, it does not make any sense. If Jesus were really the Messiah, this chosen one of God, then why didn't he overthrow the Roman occupiers? Why didn't he lead Israel to victory? Why was he killed, of all things, on a Roman cross? How could someone who died as a criminal be portrayed as the big winner? Why would you follow someone like that, right? It doesn't make a lot of sense. So in a lot of sense, this is Mark's purpose. It's to show that Jesus is the Son of God who came with divine authority to defeat the enemies of Satan and sin and death. In a lot of ways, we could say that Mark's gospel, it is an apology for the cross. Now, when we say an apology for the cross, we're not using apology in the I'm sorry sense. Sorry about the cross. We're not meaning it in the apology sense that way. An apology for the cross means that he's explaining, number one, that it was true, that the cross really happened. And number two, and probably more importantly, he's explaining why it had to happen, why it's so important, why you and I need to know and follow Jesus to the cross. It's an explanation for the cross. It's an understanding of the cross. In other words, the cross should not stand in our way of coming to Jesus, because even though it looks like Jesus lost, it was his greatest triumph and glory. That's what Mark's gospel is about. And so this is how he opens this grand, unexpected story. He begins by saying the beginning of the gospel about Jesus the Messiah, or you may have Jesus Christ in your Bibles, the Son of God, as it's written in Isaiah the prophet, and then he goes into a prophecy. He roots Jesus' messiahship all the way back in the Old Testament. Now, for you and I, when we see this word here, this word gospel, we're thinking, oh, okay, it'd be like if I say the beginning of the novel, or the beginning of the short story, or the beginning of the collection of poems, right? It's a genre of literature. But not when Mark wrote this. Matthew, Luke, and John hadn't been written yet. Mark, as far as we know, was the first writing down our biography of Jesus, so to speak. So when he says gospel, he's not talking about, I'm going to write a book about the life of Jesus, and that's called a gospel. No, the gospel of Jesus Christ here, there's no other books like that. He's talking about the good news of Jesus, right? And as we see throughout his writing, Mark often thinks about Isaiah. He refers to, out of all the Old Testament, he refers to Isaiah the most when he's thinking about who Jesus is. So this word gospel, it appears in the LXX, which is the Greek translation. The Old Testament's written in Hebrew, right? So it doesn't use Greek words. But people by Jesus' day, not everybody spoke Hebrew. So they translated the Old Testament into Greek so that ordinary people who could read could read it. And that's called the LXX. Anyway, they did that. And in Isaiah's book, they use this word gospel, euangelion. They use it in particular this verse here, which is really powerful. How beautiful on the mountain are the feet of those who bring euangelion, good news, gospel. The feet of those who bring gospel, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation, who say to Zion, your God reigns. So the first thing we need to know, if we're going to understand who Jesus is that his life, all of his life, from his birth, which Matthew and Mark doesn't even bother starting with, but all the way from his birth until his untimely, uncharacteristically horrific death, and ultimate resurrection, all of that is good news. That in some way, Jesus' life is good news. The good news, now, when in Isaiah, when he's talking about, you know, how beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, why would there be feet on the mountains? Because someone's running to tell you something that's happened afar off, and they're coming to tell you the enemy army has been defeated. The king's mortal wound has been healed. The captives have been set free. Right? That's the good news. I'm running to tell you the good news. So in Mark's gospel, he's bringing you the good news. And the good news of Jesus Christ is that you and I, we have inherited Jesus Christ's victory over Satan and death. The good news is that our mortality, our own physical lives, that's not the end of us. The good news is that we're no longer captives to sin. That's the good news that the life of Jesus means, the life of Jesus brings. And all of those stories, Mark begins from the very beginning, is going to tell us that Jesus, that he has the authority and the power to do that, because not everybody could do that, right? If I run to you and I tell you, good news, you no longer have to pay your mortgage, it's paid off. You're like, mm-mm. Dustin doesn't know what he's talking about, right? If I run to you and tell you good news, you're healed of whatever ailments you're suffering from. You're like, you're not my doctor. You don't know what you're talking about. So how does Jesus have the authority to say Satan and sin and death are defeated? So the first story, Mark, like the whole first half of the book of Mark, is about Jesus' authority and power to do that. So you see things like Jesus is casting out demons, and he's healing the sick, and he's raising the dead. He is proclaiming forgiveness of sins. And people are amazed. They are awestruck. Jesus even has command over the weather and the waves, right? People see this and like, you have to have some authority if you command the weather. That's some serious authority and power if you command the weather. And so overwhelming are these acts that even Jesus' enemies, they're like, you can't continue to do this. Jesus, the people who are following Jesus, they're trying to make sense of what it means. Jesus' own followers, his disciples, they're overwhelmed to the point that eventually they, Jesus' closest friends, his closest followers, even they look back from Jesus and look at him and they say, who is this? Who is this that even the winds and the waves obey him? Even they can't wrap their minds around how authoritative and powerful Jesus is, right? And so the people are awestruck, you see often in Mark. His disciples are dumbfounded. They don't know what to do with it. Jesus' own enemies, they can't dismiss him and say he's a hoax or a fake, which is what they'd like to do. So no one can dismiss Jesus. No one can explain him away. So powerful is this Jesus, so amazing is this man, that the turning point for the whole book, everything leads up to this and everything after this changes. The hinge point of the entire story of Jesus rests on a single question and a single answer. The single question Jesus says, but what about you? Who do you say that I am? Again, you have to know who Jesus is if you want to rightly follow him. So Jesus asks his disciples, who do you say that I am? And Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Christ, the chosen one of God. This is the hinge point. Everything after this leads us to the cross. Everything after this is trying to understand what it means to be Messiah. And so that's the question that you and I have to really answer today. That's really where we have to begin our study in Mark. We have to decide, who is this Jesus? Not who is the Jesus of the movies. Not who is the Jesus of the pulpit or the Bible classes. Who is this Jesus in Mark? We're not asking what religion he founded. We're not asking what's the right doctrine that he taught. We're not even asking what's the right church. We're asking who is Jesus, really simple, really straightforward, with a really hard answer, right? The question, who is Jesus, is at the heart of this. The religious leaders, they saw him and they said, Jesus is a threat to our power and stability. The crowd saw him and they say, Jesus is a miracle worker who can fix what's wrong with my physical body. The disciples, they saw him, and even they might have called him Messiah, but they didn't know what Messiah meant. So when they called him Messiah, they were like, he is the one who's going to lead us to victory over our Roman occupiers. Right? He's going to sit on the throne, and Israel's going to be a strong nation again, and all those people are going to come back, and we're going to be military strong. We're going to have a great economy, because that's the most important thing, that we have a strong military and a strong economy. In their minds, that was what Jesus' job was. Some people still get confused about that today. So no one really understood who he was at the time. That's the theme of Mark. One other theme of Mark is that no one understood Jesus. Because who he is really matters. Because unless we rightly understand the identity of this man, Jesus Christ, we cannot rightly follow him. So my prayer for us this morning, my prayer for us as we begin this journey, is that we might come to see Jesus with fresh eyes. Not with the long ingrained visions we may have had and been based on children's Bible classes or TV movies. But come to see the Jesus that Mark portrays. The one with authority and power. The healer. the Redeemer, the Son of God. Because that's the one who changes lives. It's not the Jesus of religion. It's not the Jesus of some particular church that we're looking for. We're looking for the Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God. And if we can help you this morning, come to know Him, to place your life in His hands, to turn to Him for healing and forgiveness and redemption. We want to pray for you, for forgiveness, for remission of your sins, to have you baptized into Jesus Christ and have those washed away. If we can help you at all with that this morning, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?